number 108. Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, the science fiction, fantasy, and mythology podcast by Jake Jackson. This week's tale is about the Volsung of Sigmund. Most of the Norse myth stories in this series are drawn from the poetic Edda, based on 10th century Icelandic manuscripts which have been translated and interpreted by many great and different poets. The first part of the poetic Edda describes the creation of the world, the adventures of the gods and their eventual downfall, but the second part comprises a series of heroic poems featuring the exploits of the Volsung family and especially Sigurd, the enduring hero of Northern European and Scandinavian legend. These poems form the basis of the great Scandinavian epic, the Volsunga Saga, and are the origin of the Nibelungenlied, the German epic, and for countless folk tales, but also for Wagner's celebrated operas from the mid-1800s, the Rheingold, the Valkyr, Siegfried and the Dusk of the Gods, or the Twilight of the Gods. The Volsung Saga is really a series of stories called the Sigurd Saga, but it does take a long time to get to Sigurd. And for this episode of These Fantastic Worlds, I'm focusing on the tales before Sigurd. Story of the Volsungs begins with Sigi, a son of Odin, a powerful man and generally respected until he killed another out of jealousy, the latter having slain more game when they were out hunting together. In consequence of this crime, Sigi was driven from his own land and declared an outlaw. But it seems that he had not entirely forfeited Odin's favour, for the god now provided him with a well-equipped vessel, together with a number of brave followers, and promised that victory should ever attend him. Thus aided by Odin, the raids of Sigi became a terror to his foes, and in the end he won the glorious empire of the Huns. For many years, he reigned as a powerful monarch. But in extreme age, his fortune changed. Odin forsook him, his wife's kindred fell upon him, and he was slain in a treacherous encounter. His death was soon avenged, however, for Rerir, his son, returning from an expedition upon which he'd been absent from the land at the time, put the murderers to death as his first act upon mounting the throne. The rule of Rerir was marked by every sign of prosperity, but his dearest wish, a son to succeed him, remained unfulfilled for many a year. Finally, however, Frigga decided to grant his constant prayer and to vouchsafe the heir he longed for. She accordingly dispatched her swift messenger, Gnar or Liod, with a miraculous apple which she dropped into his lap as he was sitting alone on the hillside. Glancing upward, Rerir recognized the emissary of the goddess and joyfully hastened home to partake of the apple with his wife. The child who in due time was born under these favourable auspices was a handsome little lad. His parents called him Volsung. When he was still a mere infant, they both died, and the child became the ruler of the land. Years passed, and Volsung's wealth and power ever increased. He was the boldest leader and rallied many brave warriors around him. Often did they drink his mead underneath the branstock, a mighty oak, which, rising in the middle of his hall, pierced the roof and overshadowed the whole house. 10 stalwart sons were born to Volsung, and 1 daughter, Signy, came to brighten his home. So lovely was this maiden that when she reached marriageable age, many suitors asked for her hand. Among them was Sigir, king of the Goths, who finally obtained Volsung's consent, although Signy had never seen him. When the wedding day came, and the bride beheld her destined husband, she shrank in dismay, for his puny form and lowering glances contrasted sadly with her brother's sturdy frames and open faces. But it was too late to withdraw. The family honour was at stake, and Signy so successfully concealed her dislike that none save her twin brother Sigmund suspected with what reluctance she had become Sigir's wife. While the wedding feast was in progress, and when the merrymaking was at its height, the entrance to the hall was suddenly darkened by the tall form of a one-eyed man, closely enveloped in a mantle of cloudy blue. Without vouchsafing word or glance to any in the assembly, the stranger strode to the branstock and thrust a glittering sword up to the hilt in its great bowl. Then, Turning slowly round, he faced the awestruck and silent assembly and declared that the weapon would be for the warrior who could pull it out of the oaken sheath, and that it would assure him of victory in every battle. The words ended. He then passed out as he had entered and disappeared, leaving a conviction in the minds of all that Odin, king of the gods, had been in their midst. Volsung was the first to recover the power of speech, and waiving his own right to first essay the feat, he invited Segir to make the first attempt to draw the divine weapon out of the tree trunk. The bridegroom anxiously tugged and strained, but the sword remained firmly embedded in the oak, and he resumed his seat with an air of chagrin. Then Volsung tried, with the same result. The weapon was evidently not intended for either of them, and the young Volsung princes were next invited to try their strength. The 9 eldest sons were equally unsuccessful, but when Sigmund, the 10th and youngest, laid his firm young hand upon the hilt, the sword yielded easily to his touch, and he triumphantly drew it out, as though it had merely been sheathed in its scabbard. Nearly all present were gratified at the success of the young prince, but Sigir's heart was filled with envy, and he coveted possession of the weapon. He offered to purchase it from his young brother-in-law, but Sigmund refused to part with it at any price, declaring that it was clear that the weapon had been intended for him to wear. This refusal so offended Segir that he secretly resolved to exterminate the proud Volsungs and to secure the divine sword to indulge his hatred towards his new kinsman. Concealing his bitterness, however, he turned to Volsung and cordially invited him to his court a month later, together with his sons and kinsmen. The invitation was immediately accepted, and although Signy, suspecting evil, secretly sought her father while her husband slept, and implored him to retract his promise and stay at home, he would not consent to withdraw his solemn word. A few weeks after the return of the bridal couple, Volsung's well-manned vessels arrived within the sight of Segir's shores. Signy had been keeping anxious watch, and when she perceived them, she hastened down to the beach to implore her kinsmen not to land, warning them that her husband had planned a treacherous ambush, from which they could not escape alive. But Volsung and his sons, whom no peril could daunt, calmly bade her return to her husband's palace, and donning their arms, they boldly set foot ashore. It befell as Signy had foretold, for on their way to the palace, the brave troop fell into Segir's ambush, and although they fought with heroic courage, they were so borne down by the superior number of the foes that the Volsung was slain, and his sons were made captive. The young men were laid bound into the presence of the cowardly Segir, who had taken no part in the fight, and Sigmund was forced to relinquish his precious sword, after which he and his brothers were condemned to death. Signy, hearing the cruel sentence, vainly interceded for her brothers. All she could obtain by her prayers and entreaties was that they should be chained to a fallen oak in the forest to perish of hunger and thirst if the wild beasts should spare them. Then, lest she should visit and succour her brothers, Segir confined his wife to the palace, where she was closely guarded night and day. Every morning, early, Segir himself sent a messenger into the forest to see whether the Volsungs were still living, and every morning the man returned, saying a monster had come during the night and had devoured one of the princes, leaving nothing but his bones. At last, when none but Sigmund remained alive, Signy thought of a plan, and she prevailed on one of her servants to carry some honey into the forest and smear it over her brother's face and mouth. When the wild beast came that night, attracted by the smell of the honey, it licked Sigmund's face, and even thrust its tongue into his mouth. Clinching his teeth upon it, Sigmund, weak and wounded as he was, held on to the animal, and in its frantic struggles his bonds gave way, and he succeeded in slaying the prowling beast which had devoured his brothers. Then he vanished into the forest, where he remained concealed until the king's messenger had come as usual, and until Signy, released from captivity, came speeding to the forest to weep over her kinsman's remains. Seeing her intense grief, and knowing that she had not participated in Sigir's cruelty, Sigmund stole out of his place of concealment and comforted her as best he could. Together they then buried the whitening bones, and Sigmund registered a solemn oath to avenge his family's wrongs. This vow was fully approved by Signy, who, however, bade her brother bide a favourable time, promising to send him aid. Then the brother and sister sadly parted, she to return to her distasteful palace home, and he to a remote part of the forest, where he built a tiny hut and plied the craft of a smith. Siggeir now took possession of the Volsung kingdom, and during the next few years he proudly watched the growth of his eldest son, whom Signy secretly sent to her brother when he was 10 years of age, so that Sigmund might train up the child to help him obtain vengeance if he should prove worthy. Sigmund reluctantly accepted the charge, but as soon as he had tested the boy, he found him deficient in physical courage, so he sent him back to his mother. Sometime after this, Signy's second son was sent into the forest for the same purpose, but Sigmund found him equally lacking in courage. Evidently none but a pure-blooded Volsung would avail for the grim work of revenge, and Signy, realizing this, resolved to commit a crime. Her resolution taken, she summoned a beautiful young witch, and exchanging forms with her, she sought the depths of the dark forest and took shelter in Sigmund's hut. The Volsung did not penetrate his sister's disguise. He deemed her naught but the gypsy she seemed, and being soon won by her charms, he made her his wife. 3 days later, she disappeared from the hut, and returning to the palace, she resumed her own form, and when she next gave birth to a son, she rejoiced to see in his bold glance and strong frame the promise of a true Volsung hero. The stories and the myths of the folk of Scandinavia and their various echoes due to migration through the Germanic regions of Northern Europe in particular, but far beyond, right across to Arabia and the Rig Veda period of India, connected by traces of the Indo-European language. Tell us of the gods, creation of the world, the end of the world, but the stories of the Volsung tell us more of the earthly heroes, even though they come from a line descending from Odin. Anyway, that's it for now. Thank you for listening, as ever. Please do recommend to anyone you think might be interested in mythology and myths and legends, the Norse and so on. So I'll see you next week. Same time. Thank you. Goodbye. The next Norse myth tells of the death of Balder.